Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Get a Grip podcast. Hope you guys have had a great week. It's kind of a weird feeling when there's not really golf going on. I know that there's some PGA Tour events going on and the LPGA is across the pond, but you know, you just kind of, this is it. Corn Ferry's done. Ryder Cup is done. The whatever they're calling the fall series, FedEx Fall, is that where we're at right now? The FedEx Fall is upon us. And I mean, you know, it's not as exciting maybe as it's been in the past, which is totally fine. And I'm totally okay with it. But yeah, golf, a weird little off season. How about that? A different episode today, as you know, if you live in areas that I live in the Northeast or in the northern parts of the country or Canada or wherever you might live, as it's kind of getting cooler, it's about to be sim season. And if you live in Arizona or Florida, you don't understand this, but sim season is very important for golfers. And as we've learned post-pandemic, the simulator world has blown up. And so I wanted to get someone on that could chat a little bit more about that world. I just find it interesting. I don't have a simulator at my house. I don't really have a place to put it. I don't know how much I love hitting indoors, but I'm becoming more familiar with it and I'm a little bit more into it than I was maybe 2 years ago. I also understand that if you live somewhere where it's cold, that's your only real opportunity to go out and swing them. So I brought on someone that knows a lot about this space, both pre-2020 and post-2020. And I was interested in some of the answers because, again, I feel like the sim world we all know about, but we don't really dive into it as much as maybe we feel like we should. And so that's kind of the purpose of today's episode. So if you're ever interested in getting a simulator, or if you're preparing for simulator season, or if you're someone that loves them and wants to learn a little bit more about them, this is the episode for you. I hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll be back next week. All right, we're joined by Carl Markstead right now. Carl is, of course, the name, the face. What do you want to be called of Carl's Place? I mean,
the Carl, of course.
The Carl of it, the brain behind it. I wanted to have a chat with you about this obviously booming kind of industry right now that is the indoor simulator space. Because, you know, with COVID and everybody building up their homes more and wanting to be at home, obviously from 2020 on, this has been a big part of golf, and it's been, it's kind of been a new part of golf, at least to me. You know, the simulator space was always a different world, and you'd go to a PGA Tour Superstore, or you'd go to Van, something like that, and you might hit into a screen. But other than that, it was outside, and that has changed a lot. How has the popularity been? Was it 2020? Was it COVID that took this from kind of a novelty to now maybe something that's in the normal kind of vernacular of the industry?
Yeah, it was certainly growing before that. I mean, we started doing golf stuff kind of 2015, 2014, and it was growing pretty steadily. We saw some pretty big gains in 2018 and 2019. But yeah, then, you know, the winter of 2020, when everyone was afraid they were going to be stuck inside without being able to go out, that's when we saw a lot of people wanting to build these setups in their homes.
And Carl, you're a guy that lives in Wisconsin. I now live in the Northeast. For a long time, didn't understand the indoor practicing that is needed in the winter. But I mean, I live in an area in Connecticut where people are obsessed with golf and they're obsessed with playing. And the season is, you know, shorter than it is in Florida or Arizona, places like that. But I have been surprised by the simulator spaces at country clubs and how many of these businesses are obviously out and about where you can go hit. And then taking that a step further, you see people that have the simulators at their homes where they can practice all year round. And it's becoming, again, more of a popular thing that we've really, really seen over the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen all those same kind of trends where, you know, we worked with a local golf course here who got rid of their pro shop and put sims in because he was like, no one ever buys anything here anyway. So, you know, they get a lot more people at the bar wanting something to do. So that was their decision. But yeah, I agree. I mean, you see it expanding kind of in every direction.
Carl, I want to go back to a story I'm interested in hearing because I was reading through a bit of your story and a lot of this originated from Mario Kart. Now I'm 39 years old. Mario Kart was a big part of my youth and growing up. And I think my wife and I had an N64 when we were living in Arizona and we would battle a little bit with that over time. Can you take us through the Mario Kart story?
Well, I was in college and living with some buddies, and we liked to play Mario Kart a lot. We played a lot of Mario Kart, and we had a projector in our living room that got a lot of use for that. And we also, as kind of a hobby, we liked to spend like a Friday, Saturday night outside by a burn pile. One of my friends was in the business of restoring prairies. And so he would always have these big piles of brush that he needed to burn and get rid of. So we'd go, hey, let's all go up to the brush pile. And I wish we could play Mario Kart while we were out here. And so that's kind of how it started with, we got to find a big, you know, white thing to put on the side of this barn. And then we can bring all the Mario Kart stuff out and sit by the fire and play Mario Kart. And yeah, so it all got started. You know, I got in touch with a fabric supplier who was willing to sell me a whole roll of this super wide fabric. And I only needed one piece. So, you know, I put it up on some message boards and said, hey, if anyone else wants to do this, I got some extra material. And it took off. You know, everyone wanted some for doing the same thing. And that's how we got started, was those outdoor theaters. We expanded from there. So.
And Carl, that world has grown. You know, I mean, I think about projection screens 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And versus, a new age HDTV at the time. And it wasn't even close, right? I mean, the HDTV would always win that battle. It feels like that projection world has caught up, if not surpassed it. And I mean, I've got buddies of mine that, you know, I mean, Sunday Night Football's on, we're watching it on a projection screen on their backyard. And I mean, you're watching it and it looks amazing. Like, it doesn't look like it used to look.
No. Yeah. The brightness of projectors you can buy now, and you get a 4K, you know, they're really amazing for not that much money. And so, yeah, that's still something we do here and there. Golf has pretty much taken over everything. We do relatively little of the backyard stuff now, but it's still there. You can still find it on our site if you want to build an outdoor screen. So
let's go Mario Kart to today, because again, I mean, I'm always fascinated with businesses, because businesses obviously start either with an idea or with the light popping up over your head, right? I mean, oh, I could do this for a living.
Yeah.
What did you want to do? Like, what was your dream job when you were 16 years old?
Yeah.
And at what point were you thinking to yourself, I could make a business out of this idea that I had sitting out in the backyard with my buddies around a fire?
Yeah, well, I was the type of guy who had not a lot of direction on that, you know, as in my teen years. And I went to a couple of different colleges and didn't like it and bounced around a little bit. Eventually, I decided I wanted to do like product design engineering, you know, work with, you know, designing new products, bringing them to market, things like that. And that's what I kind of settled on and went into. But at the same time, I was the type of guy who always had something on eBay. You know, I had a silly little website where I sold moped parts, you know, that were hard to find that I would grab. I was always looking for some little, you know, scheme to make a little money on the side. And that's all the projector screen thing was at first. I thought, oh, great, I'll buy another roll, you know, put another one out there. And it just, you know, just grinding for the few years after that, you know, every day coming home from school, cutting, you know, four or five pieces of fabric in my living room and shipping it out. I graduated, had a real job in engineering, and I was getting bugged by customers all day, and my bosses didn't care much for that. And so, I had a job that dried up, and I said, you know what, I think I could just do this full time instead of, you know, keeping it going on the side. And that's, you know, that was in 2010 where I really kind of, dedicated my full-time attention to it. And that's, you know, increased a lot from there. We got a bunch of other materials, different projector screen materials, higher end ones, better for outside. We started making these structures where we sold the fittings so you could build, you know, like a 9x16 foot structure to hang your screen on. And that was our thing. That was what we did for several years until, you know, 2014 or so, people would start calling and asking me, like, can I hit a golf ball into this screen? And I'd say, no, we tried it. It goes right through. You know what I mean? And yeah, then eventually I found a supplier that could do an impact, you know, capable screen. So I bought some and said, sure, we'll put that out there for people who want it. And yeah, the rest is kind of history, where that just, everyone wanted that, you know, in the years that followed, all of our attention went that direction. So here we are.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the boom in the business, and of course, COVID was a big boom for golf in a lot of different ways, but you know, from a golf course perspective, during COVID, all you have to do is be open, right? I mean, be open, maybe you put noodles in the holes, do whatever the case may be in terms of social distancing. For your company, it must have been different obstacles to go through, because you guys have to go into homes and build these simulators. And this is all through COVID, when everybody doesn't know what's going on and people are scared and there's protocols to be had. How did you manage the business boom while also trying to navigate this space that everybody was relatively unsure of?
Well, that's a huge advantage of what we do. We don't go into people's homes. We do everything do it yourself. So we ship you all the stuff you need and you put it together, you know, as if it were a big piece of furniture. So I think that worked very well for people, because like you said, it was weird having people in your home at that time. No one wanted to deal with that. So this was a solution where people could go online and be like, oh, I can just order one of these things. And it's a project. You know, everyone was looking for these projects during that time. And it was just a really good fit for a lot of people.
How is the process go for someone that orders something in terms of it being shipped to their house? How long is that process take? Because in theory, it's a do-it-yourself project, right? Yeah. I mean, you're building this in your home. Once it's made, you know, for you, it's scaled for you. When you get it at the house, I'm a novice handyman.
Yeah.
What's that process like for me? Is that a 2-day deal? Is it a week?
No.
Is it okay?
A couple hours. It's like putting together a tent, really. Yeah, the structure itself is made of pipes and fittings. So you put the pipe in the fitting, tighten it down, and then you have your structure that the whole thing hangs on. And then the rest of it is just Velcro, bungees, zip ties, things like that, and you're off to go. So yeah, most people, even doing it by yourself, 2-3 hours, if you got a buddy to help, 1 or 2, that's very doable. So
buy the pizza, buy the beer, come help me out. It's kind of like moving, you know, that's always the deal to do that.
Play around when we're done.
Carl, how do you keep up with technology? Because I'm assuming this technology is ever changing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how fast is the technology changing for Sims at home? Because to think about what it used to look like, I mean, I'm not going back that far. 10 years ago?
No, it was very different.
Versus 2023? I mean, you're talking about substantial changes.
The changes we saw in, like I said, 2017, 18, 19, that's when this stuff really, you know, really high-end accuracy became available at a reasonable price. I mean, it seems like all the time, you know, all the different launch monitor companies are trying, you know, something new, and we get right on it and get one in here and put it head-to-head against some of the other equipment and learn about it. And yeah, it's that's one of the funner parts, you know, seeing all the developments. So happy to do that stuff.
I mean, will you go to someone's house if they ask? Like, if they were like, hey, we want you to show up and do this, we want it to be a substantial build out, or they have a garage. I mean, I've seen people build these in storage units, you know. I mean, there are unique obstacles, I'd say, to go through sometimes.
Yeah, we definitely do. You know, we personally, like Carl's Place, does not tend to do that, but we have a list of partners kind of all around the country that are resellers for us. And so if you really have to have, you know, someone to hold your hand a little more, we can connect you with someone kind of local who can help you out.
I think accuracy is something that I've always said. You know, you think about Sims, and again, I think a lot of people's minds, and maybe that's changing now, but at least my brain with Sims has typically gone to a store. And I think about trying out wedges or trying out new irons or hitting a driver to a store. And everybody kind of walks away skeptical if those numbers are accurate.
Yeah.
I think accuracy has always been the obstacle that you guys, even if you're not trying to jump over it, you're having to convince people that it's true. Yeah. How accurate are Sims these days? And how do you sell that to people that are a bit skeptical, maybe, of if these numbers are going to be the same as if I'm going out on a driving range hitting balls?
Yeah. I mean, we test that on a regular basis. We take these units out to a driving range, you know, measure where the ball went and what does the data say. And it's pretty darn close. It's, you know, single digit percentages off, which at that point, you know, you get a gust of wind when you hit a ball, you're going to be off. So
yeah, totally.
It's as far as I'm concerned, it's close enough. You know, even if you're the type of person who knows exactly how far you hit your irons, you might be able to compensate and say, yeah, on the sim, I regularly hit them like 8 yards farther than usual. You know what I mean? But if you use it enough, you can figure that out and know.
Carl, the something I've learned, you know, with my partnership with Ping is a lot of the testing that they do is in a controlled environment. And when I say that, I mean, it is in it's covered. There's no wind. There's no, they try to do it when there's zero wind outside or there's zero water on the club face or zero water on the golf ball, because when that happens, you know, stuff goes berserk in terms of what the numbers might look like. So somebody that actually uses a sim indoors in theory could get more accurate numbers than if they were taken out, you know, a track man to the driving range and hitting there, because there were factors that are going to be involved that won't be involved inside.
Yeah, absolutely. The, you know, we generally find that the different launch monitor technologies are pretty, pretty, you know, stable relative to themselves. So you might find that a particular launch monitor, you know, off, you know, will give you an extra couple of percent every time, but it's generally pretty repeatable. And so that's where, if you're someone who really knows your shot well, you can understand that and compensate for it. And yeah, it just, it's much easier to eliminate all those variables. Like you said, wind, moisture, all the atmospheric conditions you have to consider. You know, the launch monitor is going to give you real raw data. You know, your spin was this, your launch angle was that. And, you know, depending on where you are in the world, that might do different things, but you can compare the raw data, you know, head to head, and it's pretty good.
When you think about the way golf has changed over the last few years, I think one of the biggest changes has been the ability to practice in and around your home. And of course, with that has come the explosion of golf simulators. Imagine being able to play golf no matter the weather, which is important where I live, having all of those statistics and metrics at your fingertips, playing the world's most exclusive golf courses, all from the comfort of your own home. My friends at Carl's Place can make this dream a reality, offering custom down to the inch enclosures and impact screens, launch monitors, software, projectors, hitting mats, and so much more. Carl's Place has something for every space and every budget. From easy to set up do-it-yourself kits to completely custom designed golf rooms, Carl's Place can make it happen. Enhance the house. Play a little golf at home. Check out Carl's Place online at carlofet.com. For 10% off any Carl's Place branded products, use our promo code GETAGRIP. That's all one word, GETAGRIP, at checkout. Make your indoor golf dreams a reality. Where are you guys the most popular? Like, where do you guys see the most success? Where do you guys see the most orders? I'm assuming it's cold weather, but I mean, has Canada been a place that has reached out? Like, where are you guys finding like the biggest market holes for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, you know, the biggest population states are the ones that get our orders. You know,
okay,
we get plenty to California, to Texas, to Florida. We sell a lot to Illinois. And yeah, definitely a boost in all the Midwest states where it's cold, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, like we do more there than we used to with projector screens for sure.
Carl, are you a golfer? Like when did you get into golf?
Yeah.
How often are you getting a chance to play?
I'm a very casual golfer.
Okay.
When I was younger, my dad is pretty into golfing and we would go out. I worked with him for a while. And so we would go out after work and play, you know, nine holes for twilight or something like that. And yes, very, very casual, never had a lesson in my life. You know what I mean? And I haven't been out on a real course in a very long time. You know, but I tinker around with these on a pretty regular basis, you know, get out, go sit on the driving range for a little while and see what I can do.
I mean, I'm assuming through the business, you're going to get a ton of invites to play golf. So, I mean, either you're busy with work, busy with other stuff to where you're turning those down, but I'm assuming occasionally you got to go out there and swing them in the real world, right?
You know, I've got three kids. They're young. So,
okay, well, there you go. There's the answer. There's the answer.
I'm in that stage of life where, no, that's a huge advantage to The Sims is that when I have time to golf, it's like 10 p.m. So that's what's so great about the golf Sims is that you can do that. You can go play 18 holes at 10 o'clock at night and, you know, do it that way. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I have two young kids as well, Carl. And I mean, I put a putting green in the backyard last year. I live in Connecticut, so cold weather, but I mean, I can go out there and putt and chip. As long as there's not snow on the ground, I can do it in the winter, but I've never thought about the sim advantage with the children before. And that's really smart because the windows we have, like when my buddies come over now, I mean, you know, most of my friends, just like yours, I'm sure are in a similar position, young kids, you know, two kids, multiple kids, whatever, the times we're chipping and putting is at night.
Yep.
But to have a sim at night when both the kids, or in your case, three kids go to bed, that window from 9 to 10 when football's on,
yep,
you could go out there and play, like you said, nine holes and actually get a little bit of work in.
Absolutely. You know, talking about other sports, that's one of my favorite things to do. Have some people over. You can put a game on the screen and like picture in picture, watch a football game on your golf course while you're playing 18. And it's like, that's a really fun way to spend an evening with some friends.
It's like a dream Monday night. You're like, do you want to come over? And we'll come over, watch the Packers. We'll do nothing. We'll hang out. And that'll be what we do. All right. Here's a question personally that I need to ask you. How much space do you need for one of these? Like, what's the space needed at a house to actually be able to put a Carl's Place sim in?
Well, one of the first limits you run into is your height. You know, you need a place high enough to swing a club.
The number you tell people there?
We prefer to have 9+ feet in ceiling height.
Okay.
A lot of people can do it in 8. They'll just only use their irons, their short irons or something like that. You'd be surprised how many people will do a sim where they can't swing their driver.
Interesting.
So yeah, we like 9-10 feet is really better if you can do that. That makes it really comfortable. You know, single handed, you can get away with like 12 feet if you're not switching between righties and lefties. If you do have to switch between righties and lefties, you need 14-15 feet so you can, you know, get people swinging both sides. And then, you know, 20 feet deep or so, that's kind of flexible depending on how tight you want couches to watch or whatever. We've seen a lot of people put these in like a spare bedroom.
Okay.
You know, those are some of the tighter installations where, you have 8-foot ceilings, you know, it's a 12-foot wide room, but hey, if you're a guy who just wants to go try your pitching wedge, you know, you can do that. So that works.
I guess it makes sense. Again, I mean, you live in a busy city or a place that's condensed. You live in New York City or you live in San Francisco, places like that, where, you know, you have the room potentially if you had maybe a 2-bedroom apartment. But again, going to hit balls if you live in New York is almost impossible,
right?
You know, outside of like Chelsea. But if you're just going to hit 8-irons or 9-irons and you're just simply working on one or two things to make sure the stuff's dialed, I mean, it's an easy solution that in theory is going to save you a ton of money.
Yep, absolutely. And that's why we see a lot of people doing exactly that.
What's the most popular place that people install sims in? Is it garages? Like what's the most pop? Basements, I'm assuming, are really popular.
Garages usually work the best because most garages are a little taller for fitting vehicles in. So most garages are going to be that 9+ feet tall. So that usually works out quite well. I mean, we've had people who dig out their basements to do it, you know,
really?
they've got an 8-foot tall ceiling in their basement. So they pick a room, jackhammer out the concrete, dig it down. And now they got a 10-foot tall ceiling in that room and they stick it in there. So garages, basement, spare bedrooms, those types of things. So a lot of people build a shed just for it. That's something that I really like to see. You know, you don't have space in your house or whatever, so they go build a dedicated little shed in the yard just for their golf sim. That's really cool.
Carl, are you surprised? It doesn't surprise me that much anymore, even though occasionally it does. I remember a few years ago on Twitter, I asked, what's like the weirdest thing you collect in golf? And this guy sent a picture. He had divots in plastic bags that he thumbtacked to his wall from different golf courses he played, and it ended up going kind of viral because it looked like such a psycho thing to do. Are you shocked at times at how obsessed with golfers are? Because even being as close to it as you are, I'm sure there are still times where you're like, this dude's building a whole new room for this thing, you know?
Yeah, golfers can be a special breed sometimes in that way. You see some of their rooms and they're just, you know, packed wall to wall with golf stuff on the walls. I had a guy that built a whole extra floor on top of his house to build a golf sim. So tear the roof off and build another story. People are dedicated. That helps us, you know, when you're willing to go that far to put your sim in, we say, great, we'll be able to fit that.
I was going to ask you, what's the strangest place you've put a sim in? I'm assuming building a whole floor on top of your house is probably near the top of your list.
Yeah, that was one of the different ones. You know, you'd be surprised how many people get really creative fitting these things in spaces where on first glance, you're like, that is not going to work. I was looking at one the other day where a guy had a TV monitor right in the upper corner of the sim screen. Like, boy, you really trust your shots to not want to move that screen and not hit it right there. Because
you must be good.
I would wreck that TV in like two shots.
Where are Sims growing? Like, where's a place either work-wise or business or pro shops, like you said? Like, where do you see that kind of next boom in your business that, you know, homes have been great, obviously, for you guys. I'm assuming this business in country clubs, like my club in Connecticut has three Sims in the winter. Where's that next step of boom you feel like is either coming or has come to you guys recently?
Yeah, I mean, I still probably feel like the biggest is home use. You know, that's still, people are still kind of figuring out that this is a thing you can do and afford. But yeah, then all the other kind of small independent, like golf sim studios that you're going to see pop up, I see that as a big future growth. Just, you know, you want to rent a sim for a couple hours, you know, go here and, you know, you can get like a season pass so you can go there whenever you want. That's what I think we'll see a lot of in the future.
All right. So if somebody wants to order a sim from you guys, from, is it an email? Is it a call? What's the first step in that process?
Yeah. Any of the above, you know, we have a great tool on our website for like walking you through the decisions that you need to make. And that's really quite good. We call it our build your own golf simulator tool.
Okay.
But yeah, tons of people just pick up the phone, give us a call. We'll walk you through it. Whatever, you know, your preferred way of handling it is, we're down. So.
All right. So I call you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. When is my sim in my house set up? What's the timeline for that? Because, you know, people, we get obsessed with stuff. We want it right away. Right.
Yep. Generally a couple of weeks. You know, it changes depending on the time of year. You know, October, November, December, it gets really hot, and that's, our lead times tend to get a little longer during that period. But, you know, in the summer, it's just a couple of days. So, you know, depending on the time of year, couple of days, couple of weeks, somewhere in there.
Carl, are you from Wisconsin originally?
Yes, born and raised here.
Is it crazy to know that the state you're in, which is a 6-7 month season, maybe?
Yeah.
Has become this incredible golf destination? Because I mean, it's like legitimately top two or three favorite golf state for me in the entire country.
Yeah. It's really cool to see. You know, it's one of my favorite things about real golf, you know, going out and being outside and having the sun on your face and, you know, trees, grass, all that stuff. And, you know, Wisconsin has so many great spots for that. So it's good to see people appreciating that.
Yeah. I mean, I just went to I went to Kohler for the Ryder Cup. I'd gone up there a few years ago with my dad when we were out there for Erin Hills for the US Open, but I never played the courses. I mean, I'd walked them and driven in golf carts, and I got a chance to play them for the series we did with Scratch. And I was blown away at Whistling, because I think playing it is such a different experience than obviously just seeing it.
Yeah.
And Black Wolf's so good. And that par three they did, the Bass, is so cool. And then you've got Erin and St. Valley and Century World. And then the privates like Blue Mound and Milwaukee. It's just, again, for a state that doesn't have a very long season. And I know some of the, what is it, La Sonia? Like, I mean, some of these places are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they're such, I know they've not become hidden gems anymore because people talk about them a lot, but I just feel like you could go to Wisconsin for like 2-3 weeks and not check off all the boxes, you know?
No, absolutely. You know, we pack in our summers pretty tight here. You know, when the weather turns in like March, you know, you got people out on the course and everything's dead, you know, that's okay. They can't take their carts, they got to walk, but they're always itching to be out there, and it'll be like 40 degrees and you'll see a foursome out on the fairway in some of these places. So, yeah.
Carl, one of the things up here that I noticed is there's like a toughness level to it when it's cold.
Yeah.
And the first round I played when I moved to Connecticut, I think I had 3 layers of pants and I think maybe 3 or 4 tops. Like I had an undershirt and a sweatshirt and a vest over that. And I was finishing and this dude was teeing off in shorts.
Yeah.
I'm not that tough, obviously.
I get my shorts out in, you know, March, put them away usually November, just because you gotta take it when you can get it around here, you know, stretch it out as long as possible.
Carl, how's your sim set up? When did you put it in your house? Like at what point in the building golf simulators did you actually put one in your own house? And what's your own setup now? I'm assuming it's pretty good.
I don't have one in my house because I have the showroom right here. I live about...
Oh, okay.
I live about 2 minutes away from our shop here. So this is my sim, you know, that I use when I need it. You know, we have a few different setups in the showroom here, but the one that I kind of like to go to is either the IX02 with GS Pro or the Foresight GC Hawk. Those are pretty good experiences. So.
You're like, you know what? I'm going to leave. I got a 2-minute drive. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I'm going to go hit balls for an hour and a half. Have your
absolutely.
Kids got into it at all? Have they started to swing them yet?
Yep. They love, I mean, it's so cool to see some of like the different sort of fantasy courses you can play. The kids love that, where, you know, you're hitting a golf ball under a dinosaur or, you know, all that cool stuff. There's some really creative stuff out there. And yeah, the kids love that.
Yeah. My son still doesn't really care. He's 4 and he's still like,
yeah,
he'll kind of do like the karate chop golf swing, which just scares me. Yep. Like he's going to kill me. But I've got a 1.5-year-old daughter and I think she's going to be my golfer. She's like, she pays attention to the dad. She wants to pick up the golf balls. Like she now drops them in the hole and things like that. So maybe in a couple of years, I might be hitting you up and I'll need to sim up my spot. I was kind of like thinking about my ceiling down here. This is the basement. I'm like, I don't think I could do it down here, but maybe I could talk the wife into the garage. That could be the place.
Get that jackhammer out, bust up that floor, dig it out. You can do it.
She thinks I'm a nut in and of itself. If I started jackhammering the basement, she'd be like, what the hell are you doing now? I'd be like, it's for work. You'll be fine with it. Yeah, you're going to love it. Carl, tell people where they can check you out, where they can get set up and all that.
Yep. Our website is carloveet.com. You can check out the do-it-yourself builder there and kind of explore all the different options, or we have some kind of pre-configured bundles that people might be interested in, or just give us a call. That's right on the website there. And if you have just no idea, we have a great team of folks here that can help you walk through it. So give us a call, visit the website.
Yeah, it's nice to call a business and like somebody that's a human answers and can actually help you out, because so many times you're confused or you don't know what's going on. And it's like, no, this is actually extremely helpful when you give people a ring. So
yeah,
that's good to hear. Carl, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Like I said, who knows? Maybe I'll buy a jackhammer this winter and it might get dialed. I'll let you know.
We have a great design service. We can help you, you know, map it all out. You just let us know. We'll be ready to help out.
If you see a jackhammer on my Instagram, you know where I'm going, Carl. That's the key. But thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
We'll keep an eye out. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
A big thanks to you guys for supporting the podcast and listening. Going to have a couple of podcast guests on over the next couple of weeks that play on the not big, big tours. They play on one step down tours. I'm going to chat with Shad Tootin next week, actually, who, if you follow the Korn Ferry Tour at all, you saw the whole situation with Shad. And the rules issue basically cost him his PGA Tour card. I was texting with Shad this week about coming on next week and just talking about it, and he agreed to do it. So that'll be coming your way next week. Big thanks to everybody for, again, listening, supporting, following, commenting on the pod. I see those, and I appreciate them. And yeah, couldn't do it without you guys. So we will check back next week. Have a great weekend.